about to attend. And we'll go next to the United States versus Christensen. Mr. Lieberman.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thank you. May it please the Court. My name is Michael Lieberman from Federal Defender Services of Wisconsin, and it is my pleasure to represent the appellant, Melissa Christensen, in this case, as I did below. In our briefs, Your Honor, we raised three claims of procedural sentencing error. In the interest of time, I will only address two of those during my argument unless the Court has any questions. And on the question of the mass marketing enhancement, I'll simply rely on the arguments made in the brief. The two remaining issues that I want to touch on in my argument are the vulnerable victim enhancement and the 3553A1 error in the district court's express refusal to consider the history and characteristics of the defendant in reaching a reasonable sentence. To be clear, our claims are only of procedural error. We are not here to argue that the sentence of 4 months was in any way substantively unreasonable, rather that it was procedurally unreasonable. On the question of vulnerable victims, this was an adoption fraud case, as the Court knows, and in essence, the district court ruled that women who want to adopt children are, as a class, vulnerable victims. It's our position that the Court was incorrect about that for a number of reasons.
Let's assume that was wrong. Isn't it enough to have one of them be vulnerable?
Perhaps, but there's no evidence that any of them were particularly vulnerable.
One had a hysterectomy and was very emotional about having a child.
Sure. And one of the requirements for the enhancement to apply is that the defendant has to either know or should have known about that. And there's no evidence in the record that at any relevant time Ms. Christensen knew or should have known of that. I think what the Court understandably did is confuse the issue of vulnerable victims with sympathetic victims. There's no question these women are sympathetic. They're in a bad situation. They wanted children. They couldn't have children. And the effect of this fraud was devastating. But the time that the Court has to focus on vulnerability is prior to the fraud, not after the fraud. And the question is, at the time that Ms. Christensen committed...
Well, isn't it the effect? Isn't that the... How does that differ from vulnerability is measured by impact, isn't it?
Your Honor, I believe what cases from this Court and every other circuit say is the victim's vulnerability has to make them more susceptible to the fraud, not more victimized by the fraud. It's that they're susceptible to the fraud because of their vulnerability. And the defendant has to know or should have known of that vulnerability. There's no evidence here that Ms. Christensen knew of that. She went to a website for couples seeking surrogates. It's called surromoms.com. She posted some ads. She responded to some ads. There's no evidence presented that in any of those ads anybody posted that they were infertile or in desperate need of kids or anything else. So I think legally the Court is correct that as long as one of them is vulnerable, that's enough. I don't think the record in this case supports that conclusion. I think the Court also erred in equating people who desperately want something, even something as precious as children, and I don't mean to minimize that. I've got two kids of my own, and they are unbelievably precious to me. But there's a very strong difference between wanting something, even wanting something very badly, and needing something. And in the Court, analogizing the desire to adopt children with the desperate need for a kidney transplant or a cancer medication, I think the Court confused the issue there.
Well, it's a little different kind of need, but it's the still a need, isn't it?
Well, a lot of people need a lot of things for a lot of reasons, Your Honor. And at some point, the court has to draw a line between what's a want and what's a need. And what the vulnerable victim enhancement is designed to apply to...
What is a want, then? Unjustifiable need, or what?
Well, Your Honor, I would love a new car. A lot of people would love a lot of things. But what the enhancement applies to is when the need is so desperate that it overbears your ability to make a rational decision. And that's just not the case here. There is absolutely no evidence in this record that that's the case here. And for those reasons, it's our position that the vulnerable victim enhancement was inappropriate. Moving on to the 3553 issue. As the court knows, after calculating the guideline range, which is our position was incorrect for a couple of reasons, but after calculating that range, the court then imposed a sentence at the bottom of that range. In doing that, the court acknowledged all of the very positive aspects of Ms. Christensen's life, all of the very positive changes that she had made, and in fact commented that in the close to 30 years that this judge has been on the bench, that Ms. Christensen has made more positive changes than almost any defendant Judge Crabb had ever seen. Judge Crabb then went on to say that none of that matters because her job is not to sentence Ms. Christensen for the person that she is. And frankly, 3553A1 says that is exactly part of what the district court's job is. Congress directs the court to consider and to impose a sentence considering the history and characteristics of the defendant. It's the first requirement under 3553A. And it's our position that in saying that not only was she not going to consider that, but she couldn't consider that, she wouldn't consider that, it wasn't her job, that the court erred in imposing that sentence. And the fact that by refusing to consider all the positive, the court then imposed a sentence at the bottom of the guideline range certainly raises questions as to whether the court was relying on a presumption of reasonableness of the guidelines. With that, I see I'm into my rebuttal time, and I will reserve the remainder of my time. Thank you.
Ms. Ault.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Elizabeth Altman, and I represent the United States in this case. Responding to the defendant's arguments, I will, too, focus on just the vulnerable victims enhancement and the reasonableness, unless the Court has any questions about the mass marketing. Otherwise, I'll rest on my brief for the mass marketing.
This is just another one of these cases where if the district judge wants to impose a four-month sentence here, we could have easily done that without imposing these two enhancements.
Absolutely.
Why did the judge just say that?
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor. I think that the court was trying to be true to the guidelines and trying to evaluate the guidelines and believed that the victims...
But, I mean, the judge could say, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt and not apply either of these enhancements.
Absolutely. But again, in...
The sentence is 4 months.
In our district, both the United States Attorney's Office and I think the federal defenders and certainly the courts try to be intellectually honest in evaluating the guidelines. And in doing that, the court believed that the vulnerable victim application was warranted. And at the end of the sentence, had she said, even without these two, I would still sentence you to 4 months, we probably wouldn't be here today.
That's right.
Ms. Altman, what was the government's position at sentencing?
I advocated for vulnerable victims, Your Honor. It was not included in the pre-sentence report. I objected to the pre-sentence report saying that they were vulnerable victims.
Did you recommend a sentence apart from that?
I recommended a guideline sentence. And as noted by Mr. Lieberman, that is what she got. It's the government's position that certainly not everyone who wants to adopt a baby is vulnerable. Certainly no one is going to say that Madonna is vulnerable or Angelina Jolie is vulnerable, but there is a spectrum. And by the time you've gone through in vitro fertilization and you've gone through traditional adoption methods and you're at the point where you are responding to an ad on the internet to get a baby, you are at a point where you are particularly susceptible to what's being offered. And that's the government's position as far as the victims as a group in this case. Now, with regard to the specifics, Mr. Lieberman suggests that there is no evidence in the record that the defendant knew that, that at least two of these victims were susceptible, and I suggest that there is. I know Mr. Lieberman objects to the way it was presented, but I did read into the record two emails, two introductory emails from victims to Ms. Christensen. These emails were written before Ms. Christensen had chosen these victims to allegedly adopt her unborn child. What I did not do was put an exhibit sticker on these emails and hand them to the judge so she could read along with me. But I read them into the record, and it's the government's position that that does constitute evidence that the court can consider. And from these emails, the defendant knew that victim MW had lost two babies and lost another adoption, had another adoption fall through, and that JS had tried artificial insemination for many years and didn't succeed. She talks about disappointment and heartbreak and having to have a hysterectomy. And the defendant knew or should have known from this correspondence that at least these two victims in particular were particularly susceptible to her crime. And therefore, either way you look at it, the government believes that the enhancement was properly applied. Now, looking at the reasonableness, the district court reviewed a lengthy sentencing memorandum. She received letters of support from the defendant's family and friends. She heard the defendant allocute at sentencing. And the district court took great pains to go through all of the positive changes the defendant had made in her life. She talked about inpatient treatment and the fact that she had gotten married and the fact that she was enrolled in college and was addressing her substance abuse and mental health issues. The district court simply rejected her argument for probation and found that based on the crime, the defendant received a term of imprisonment or deserved a term of imprisonment. Now, she did say that she was sentencing the defendant not for the person she was, but for the nature of the crime. And while that was perhaps an artful way of saying it, I don't think that it's fatal. When you look at the entire record, it's one isolated comment. It was a comment which counsel had the opportunity to object to and ask the court to clarify, but he didn't. Judge Crabb is an experienced judge. She has sentenced hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. And I think I submit what she was trying to do was to give the defendants, and as she said, she frequently does this, she wants to give the defendants some hope. She wants to say to them, you are not a bad person, you did a bad thing. And while perhaps she didn't say that the best way that she could have, I think that's what she was doing. She's not going to say, you are a horrible person and you deserve this amount of time in jail. She doesn't want people to think that. She's giving them hope. She's giving them confidence that something can happen. And that's what she meant by her statement. And I think if you look at the record as a whole, that's what you can get from it. The record shows that the court carefully evaluated all of the factors and just simply found that the personal characteristics were outweighed by the nature of the crime.
Ms. Altman, was the Stover case from the Eighth Circuit brought to the judge's attention? Was that into the discussion during sentencing?
I don't believe it was in the discussion regarding sentencing. I believe it probably was in the PSR objections because I objected to it not being included, and the PSR said, you're wrong, this isn't allowed. The Stover case did say, as a group, they are not vulnerable. Obviously, I think that's wrong, but it also did hold out for the possibility that individuals, there could be cases where individuals showed their vulnerability, and as I said, I think that's an alternative finding in this case.
So the judge was made aware through the PSR of the Stover case?
I believe...
Or if either of you discussed it, that's all. I'm not suggesting whether it's controlling or not. I just wanted to know whether Judge Crabb was aware of it.
In looking at the objections, it does not look like the Stover case was brought to the court's attention. I don't recall whether it was brought to the court's attention by the defendant or not. And unless the court has any other questions, I would simply ask this court to affirm the defendant's sentence.
Thank you, Ms. Mr. Lieberman.
Thank you, Your Honor. To start with where the court started in its questions to Ms. Altman, we don't know what whether Judge Crabb simply wanted to impose a four-month sentence and would have done the same thing in a 0 to 6 month sentencing guideline range, or if starting with the guideline range, as Rita and Gall and all of this court's authority tell her she has to, that's where she wound up. We don't know.
What's the guideline range here?
It was 4 to 10 months as calculated, 0 to 6 months if either of my positions were adopted. We don't know. And as this court said in Cunningham, it said in Villegas Miranda, it said in all sorts of other cases, the question isn't what this court would have done. The question isn't even whether the sentence itself was substantively reasonable. The question is, did the court employ the proper procedures in reaching that sentence? And our position is she didn't. And if this court remands, which is what we think the court should do, and if Judge Crabb articulates a better reason for imposing a four-month sentence, then perhaps that would be an appropriate sentence. But that's not the situation that the court has now.
She's not in custody, is that right?
She is not in custody. As far as the emails, there's no evidence in the record. There's no evidence in the record. There's argument in the record by Ms. Altman about emails. There is no evidence in the record that Ms. Christensen ever saw those emails. The court was simply being asked to take the government's word for that. I don't dispute. I'm not here to cast aspersions on the government, but the court has to make an independent determination of that, and there is simply no evidence. Judge Flom, to answer your question about the Stover case, I do not believe that was ever presented to Judge Crabb. So with that, I urge the court to vacate and remand for resentencing. Thank you.
The case will be taken, and Ms. Alden, and the case will be taken under advisement.